Call to order the September 9th regular council meeting. Please stand for private invitation and we'll follow by the pledge of allegiance.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Hey.
Well, you can.
We're going to move to item 1D, the citizen input. Do we have anybody that would like to come forward and give some input? Hearing none, we'll move to item 1E, which is roll call. And everybody is present except for the mayor. I don't think we have to excuse him, do we? No. Okay. So we are on item 2, approval of the agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? It is approved. So we'll go to item 3, our consent agenda.
I make the motion to approve tonight's consent agenda.
I'll second.
Item's been made and, or yeah, the motion's been made and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed? And that passes. So we're going to move to our current business, which is 4A. And we have finalizing the budget committee schedule with Spencer.
There we are. I put it up there. Thank you so much. This is a brief continuation of the conversation we started at our last meeting. I hope over the last week you've had a chance to look at your schedules and take a look at this schedule. I know we need to make some changes here. So I can start. I know that our one Councilman Everett came up to me and let me know that his meetings here on the 2nd and the 9th, those are both Tuesday or Wednesday meetings. And he can't meet on those Wednesday meetings. Wednesday isn't a day that works for him. So I'm wondering if we can switch the October 2nd and 3rd meeting, those two, and then the 9th and 10th. So we'd switch the Wednesday and the Thursday for those two. So let's see, on the 2nd, that's law enforcement. So we have Lawless, Garza, Everett. And on the 3rd, we have Water Sewer with Doro, Lawless, Snyder. So Lawless is the same for both of them. But then the other four of you, is that doable?
I'm good with that.
So we can change the 2nd and the 3rd. I will change those two.
How about the law enforcement on the 2nd? Can that be changed to an earlier day?
That's when it's changing.
Oh, that's the one?
Yeah.
One of them.
You mean on, let's see, law enforcement? Yeah, that's on the 2nd.
Earlier date.
Oh,
earlier.
Instead of the day after?
With the 1st? Or
What if we switch that one with the 1st?
That'll work.
The meetings 2 and 3 on the list, street TBD with law enforcement. So it'd be the Tuesday and Wednesday would be switching that 1st. If that's fine with everyone. Lawless is still the same. We have Garza and Everett that would move up a day, and Doro and Snyder that would move to the. That works?
That works.
Okay. give that a shot. And once we're done here, nothing is set in stone. We can always make adjustments as we're going.
What was the ninth going to move to, the Thursday?
Well, so that's the other one we can talk about. Do you want to switch the ninth with the 10th? So switch these last two meetings, solid waste and special revenue debt service. Or we could switch it with the park and rec, switch 5 and 6 here.
So just take solid waste, that meeting, and switch it up or switch it down.
Those are both good for me. So whichever.
Anyone else have any opinions? Anything that's a little easier, a little harder?
Can you redo the list and get back those?
Yes.
Like Parks and Rec, the 8th. Those we can we move those up? Like a week or so. The reason I said that the one, the first guy, leave the second for about 10 days.
It's difficult to move. That would be hard.
So with the general government?
Which one?
The general, the first one.
Solid waste with that one?
Mm-hmm.
1 and 6? Yeah, I have no problem with that.
No, you wanted to move Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec. Yeah, Parks and Rec 2.
One. Spencer, will we be able to Zoom on any of these?
You can Zoom on all of them. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
let's leave it there then. Yeah, we're fine.
Okay.
So here's
a, well, let's look at the solid waste. Is it fine to switch solid 6 and 7 here? Switch those last two. If we do that, here's something else I just realized. Councilman Barnes is not on this list. I apologize. That is completely my fault. I grabbed the list from last year, and I wonder I don't know why. I don't have a reason. Okay, yeah. Last year. Yeah. Okay.
So it may be good to go back to the year before.
Well, can we just...
I'm available. My schedule allows for any of those dates and times.
Yeah.
So if you need someone to fill in, I'm available.
Yeah. Does anyone else have a day that a couple of... I'd love to grab Councilman Barnes for a couple of these meetings also. Some of you that are on multiple meetings, let's see who's on the most. Doro and Lawless, you two are on a number of them. Mm-hmm. Have any that we can?
Doro, take law enforcement.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Take law enforcement in my place.
I apologize.
Okay.
I could give up the special revenue debt service.
I can take them all.
You're going from zero to hero here.
Take advantage of using me.
You want 2 or 3?
3, it's fine.
Okay.
I'm available, so good learning experience.
On special revenue service in place of Doro. Yeah. Well, that's great. I will update this list and send that back out to everyone on your email, your work emails. And take a look. And as life happens, you know, we can make changes and adjustments as we need. Thank you so much, and I apologize for that.
Okay.
I'm so glad I saw that. Jesus.
I didn't know it was a first year thing. So.
So that's all I have. Thank you so much.
So now we're going to move to 4B, public hearing on home occupation regulations to adopt ordinance 1617 amending OMC 1759 home occupations. And we have is there something I need to read or the okay, just a description. Okay, so we're opening the hearing at 6:10.
So these are our regulations for home-based business. And the existing regulations were kind of confusing. It was kind of some of the, it was like scattered through the chapter. So the Planning Commission, we tried to make it more organized and also more updated with current times as far as what people are doing as businesses. This was a multi-year effort, a little bit at a time. And so I provided for you kind of a summary of the changes. We can go through any of those if you have any questions. One thing I would like to ask is that I did neglect to send this to the city attorney. So I would like you to hold the public hearing, but maybe and give any direction, but hold off on actually adopting it until a future meeting, just to make sure that our city attorney has a chance to comment before you adopt it.
So do we, let's see, do we have any public testimony in support? Okay, and do we have anybody that would like to testify in that's neutral to the proposal? I'm hearing none. Do we have anybody that wants to testify in opposition? Hearing none, then do we have any discussion? At this point? All right, then we're not going to make any decision on this tonight. We're going to send this to the council. So we will close the public testimony at 6:12. Do we have any deliberation? All right.
Do you have to make a motion to table it until the attorney looks at it?
Is it
actually
to
table?
Public hearing's closed, so you don't have that issue.
You don't have to make a motion.
No. Bring it back to you as soon as the city attorney has done her review of it.
So we're just going to move to 4C. It's approval of an ordinance adopting new section failure to supervise a minor, and we have Chief Rim.
Thank you, Council. Before you, is the second draft of the ordinance that we had discussion on a couple weeks ago. I have had discussions with the other stakeholders in the judicial system regarding this ordinance, and those included the judge and the city prosecutor and the city attorney. The city attorney is the one who authored it. First point has authored others in the state. The judge has to be neutral on opinions regarding her support or not in support of law, but she was interested in it. The city attorney actually has prosecuted a couple of these in the Tri-Cities. And then the discussion is with him when I introduced the idea of having a warning as part of an element to the successful prosecution of such ordinance. That's what won him over. So yeah, make sure that there's a a valid warning of some kind, whether it be written or on body camera or that. So that has been added to this ordinance. Part of the idea on this ordinance is that you can get in more trouble with your dog at large right now than you can have your kids at large. And so this is a shift of responsibility. And with the current juvenile justice system that we're held right now, this is one tool that we could use. So I'm asking that council review and go over this ordinance. I'd be more than happy to answer any questions. And another part of this deal is that any law is only as good as how it's interpreted and it's enforced. So there would have to be additional training to the officers and make sure that they understand the spirit and then the usefulness of it. So that would also be done.
So is there anything in this, isn't everything that's in this already in state law?
No. The part of it that isn't, now there a good some of it is, that is correct. The part that isn't in state law is section one. That's the section that I'm most interested in. So that just makes it so if a guardian or legal guardian parent has received a proper warning that their 16-year-old son has been arrested for graffiti, has been a malicious mischief or shoplifting, that then they too, because they failed to supervise it on the second, third, fourth arrest that they can.
Explain to me, how are you going to supervise a 16-year-old to keep him from going out and tagging a fence? It's not the parent that's out there doing it. There's no way that you can supervise your 16-year-old 24 hours a day.
I understand that, but at least they could try. And that's all we're asking for. We're not saying that that every one of them is going to get a ticket. No, I fully understand that.
Changed quite a bit from the first time you brought it. Mm-hmm. There's a lot different in here. But I still don't like the fact that you want to go out and prosecute parents for their 16-year-olds doing something when there's no way, there's no possible way that you can, like I said, supervise a 16-year-old 24 hours a day.
Then the other scenario would be you have a 10-year-old that's out doing the same thing, which we've had, and we can't make a 10-year-old responsible.
So a 10-year-old, a little bit different than a 16-year-old.
Right.
You know, it just, I don't like the fact that you want to go after parents for their kids. I don't.
What it does set up is the conduit for restitution for the 10-year-old if they were to get in trouble.
But I think
this is a child under 18.
But I think we still need to do something to hold the responsible parties, the parents, responsible for their juvenile's actions.
Did your parents know what you were doing when you were 16 every hour of the day?
For the most part, yes. Or else there are consequences in the home.
Most parents, back in the day, back in that day, it's a different time. Parents now, I just...
We need to get them engaged in their juveniles' lives. And this, I don't think it's all about arresting a parent.
So this misdemeanor violation goes to the parent the second time?
It could. That doesn't mean it always will. Now, it could. Now, if we have a parent that is trying, that has taken the steps to get social services involved regarding their children, you know, that showed some effort, then naturally, no, that's not what we're after. But it's the facilitators, and there's facilitating parents out there, that those are the ones that, yeah, are probably going to go down that road.
So how about getting something in there that says that you've got a juvenile, you've got a problem with juvenile, this is what we're going to do to help you control them rather than write you a citation?
We have that.
You know, so what's the difference if you got a 16-year-old driving his car 40 miles an hour down Main Street? Are you going to go write that parent a citation, or are you going to write that child a citation?
And the difference on that is that the municipal court has jurisdiction for 16 and over traffic violations. So that is already in place on that exact one. So the answer would be no.
But it's exactly the same thing.
You answered about if we have things for them to do as far as interventions with their kids' behavior. That on the other section, it does mention that if the parent hasn't taken the steps towards utilizing, juvenile court or social services to help with their kids, or they haven't reported their kids as a missing or runaway, And so, if they're taking positive steps toward that to help that, no, that's not going to be the type of parent that we're going to issue a citation to. This is after for facilitators. That's what it's designed for.
I know it's a tough one, Corey, but it will work for some.
The problem is the influences now that kids are getting in school. I think I said the last time we talked about this, 30 years ago, this would have worked great, but it was a different time. Parents had more control over their kids. The kids didn't have the influences that they have in school right now.
Maybe that's what we need, to have more influence for our kids.
I agree with you 100%.
I don't agree with Corey. I don't think 30 years ago, this would even have been considered.
Mm-hmm.
This is idiotic. It really is. You read like number two, it is unlawful for any parents or legal guardian or any other person having the care or custody of a minor under the age of 18 to fail to provide a home or settled place of abode, fail to exercise proper parental control over such minor. Mm-hmm. That is so friggin' broad. And I know kids growing up that the parents had had it with them and said, that's it. You get your ass out of my house now. So are you going to come back and prosecute parents that do something like that? Says you can.
Those statements actually came out of RCWs. And so even as it is today, you can't throw away a child. And so the answer is no. You a parent cannot kick somebody of their kids 18 out of their under the age of 18 out of their house. They can't do it.
So
it is already in RCW.
According to the state,
the problem where you got parents that can't control their kids. You can't.
So what do you do?
Yeah, I mean.
Okay, so that's what.
You're done. You have had it. You cannot control them. They're ganged up. They're doing vicious things,
mm-hmm.
Like the kid in Moses Lake that shoots his girlfriend by accident because he's shooting another gang member. Is Moses Lake going to prosecute the parents for the kid doing what he did? Now, I mean, so what do you do? If you want that child removed from your home, you want to, you don't want to expose him to the others that you have in your family.
I see what you're saying, and I'm going to go back to the idea that one, it's the facilitators that I would be more after on this, not the parents that are trying. And you show me a parent that is in the position that you're describing, and I agree that there has to be something. And there's family reconciliation through CPS. There's kids court through the Adams County Juvenile Department. There's probation and parole ideas. There's faith-based stuff. And if they're taking steps and trying, that's not the parent that we're going to be citing. That's not the parent that we're going to
decide. You say that because they're engaged in the process
to
try to get assistance for the juvenile.
They're not ignored.
It is the adults that are not doing anything to try to rein in the juvenile that need the assistance. And this is another, call it a stick, to try to get them to help us help that juvenile.
And even if they were cited, the judge has the discretion to say, okay, we know these programs exist. Now you have to get them into it.
That is a pretty positive I just don't believe for a New York second that there's a parent out there that doesn't care and don't let their run. I think they're at their wit's end. They're just the wit's end, and they don't know what to do. They don't know what to do because they've got this kid running wild.
Mm-hmm.
Now they've got an officer at their door writing them a citation because their kid's running wild. They've got rocks thrown at them from every direction of the world.
The training and implementation of anything new ideas like this is going to be important. Absolutely. And that's where the officers are expected to follow the guidelines of the administration. Absolutely. You know, so there's going to have to be some proper supervision on this. Absolutely.
You know, we've got a great department. You've got smart guys, you know, but what happens when you get one that's out for vengeance or one that's just PO'd at the world and he's going to start writing citations?
Well, that's just first line supervision will kick in on that first. And that's what sergeants are for.
I'm not totally against all this. I think there's a lot of really good things in
here. Yeah, the vague stuff in here comes out of RCWs. Okay, it's section one that does. That's the section that I want.
Was that the supervised?
It's unlawful for any parents or legal guardians or any other persons having the care or custody of a child under the age of 18 to fail to properly supervise and care for such minor, in that such failure supervision or care contributes to the minor violating any laws of the United States, the state of Washington, or any city or into the city of Phil or Adams County. So this would be the 3 a.m. breaking into a store, and the kid had been out of the home for 72 hours and they did not report him as a runaway. So they didn't take the social services ends of it. So that's what we're looking at. I'm looking at this for the 15-year-old kid with a fully automatic pistol at Scutney and 7th, where his brother's already in jail for homicide. And the homicide occurred at Sullivan and Rose. It's the little brother now is into it.
And this is a set of parents that has just given up on the world.
No, they facilitate.
They're a bad element as well, then. Is that what they're teaching their children to be this bad element?
If they're not looking at that, they know that, and their kids are already having guns out there. I mean, for a 15-year-old or 12-year-old to get a hold of a fully semi-automatic pistol.
I don't know.
That's the parents that I believe.
I see what is trying to be accomplished with this ordinance, which is adopted in several other cities. Mm-hmm. I see what's trying to be accomplished with this, making, you know, the parents responsible for not, you know, having a bad influence on the kids' growth. But I also see it being used differently as well, to put a good family, a good parent in a bind.
I think that goes under for proper supervision from the department. You know, and that doesn't take away still the idea that the judge has discretion. That it does not take that away.
My mom and dad were good people, very good people. And there was a lot of times where we took off and we were out of the house at 3 o'clock in the morning. We were doing things we shouldn't have been doing. Mm-hmm. If the cops ever came to my dad and arrested him, we wouldn't have been living there anymore.
Yeah, and this you say arrest him. This we wouldn't arrest on this. This is against somebody we're going to transport to Sunnyside. That's not the idea there, because then you just mess things up. You need to get them into the system to get them the assistance that they need, and sometimes it takes a citation to get there, just like a DUI ticket. You know, you get your first DUI, you're under a 1.5. Odds are you're going to alcohol counseling. Okay, this could go to parent strategies.
So the unlawfulness for the parent is not a criminal act, then?
It is a misdemeanor.
Even if the child did a criminal act,
right,
you're not going to charge the parent with a criminal act. You're going to, what, bring him to court and what? Fine him? How are you going to penalize?
That's the discretion of the judge. Okay. There can be a fine attached with this, but it starts out as a misdemeanor. I mean, that's what the federal municipal court can file on. What the goal on any of these types of laws on here is change of behavior. That's the goal. It's not the goal is to harm and take people out of their checking account. That's not it. The idea is a change of behavior. That's the idea.
The problem is once these kids get to this point, they're past the point of parental guidance. Mm-hmm. They are. I mean, you're an officer.
I can say that for the in general, the majority of the parents that you say that they're beyond, they've called for help. Juvenile services have been involved. Mm-hmm. Integrated health services have been involved. They identified individuals with mental health issues or whatnot, or substance abuse issues. The parents are engaged. It's still the juvenile that's running out of control. So we're not saying those parents, they're doing nothing. We're talking about the parents that aren't doing nothing, and it's documented that they're just
okay. Then how
they're doing nothing to change their child.
How do you make that exemption or exclusion?
But that's for the courts to do.
The court can,
that's for the judge and the prosecutor.
And then it's a proper push of the law on it, where you know that the cops, they're going to know that. They're going to say, because we keep records on who's in where and how they're doing, and you know what the dispositions are in their other courses, cases, and that. You know, and so it's not that we just going to be blindly put out there. That's not true. It's going to say, okay, and the parents go, I've tried this, I've tried that, I've done, okay. You know.
So what happens then? So you've got little Johnny's out there, 15 years old, out tagging fences. You go to Johnny's dad and say, hey, this is, why aren't you supervising your kid? And Johnny's dad says, I've called you guys for help. I've called this person for help. I've called such and such for help. I'm not getting any help. Little Johnny's still out there tagging fences.
Okay.
So what happens then?
Then that in itself falls back into the juvenile court system if little Johnny is still doing that. So clearly there might be a mental health issue there. There might be a substance abuse issue there. There's some decision-making problems with little Johnny. There's counseling that's available, just to make sure that at least they're in the system and they're fine.
I think it's a good effort to keep the parents engaged with their juveniles.
Until
the 18.
I'm seeing this as throwing rocks at parents that's already been covered in rocks.
I think the system will, through investigations, and it gets into the court system, the prosecutor, the judge, juvenile services, they all collaborate. We're not looking at throwing parents in jail.
No.
But if we can get them to the table and collaborate, to say, hey, you have a stake in your juvenile's well-being, their growth. Still, you can't just throw them out like a baby. You have to keep trying until they turn 18. They turn 18, become an adult, whole different story.
Okay, then I think.
But until such time, you have to be engaged.
You both are making exceptions and exclusions to what you're really wanting to accomplish with this. And I would, you know, I would welcome that in this ordinance.
So that
people that are trying to do it right,
mm-hmm. well, that's, if
are not going to be hurt by it. They're already doing everything possible to.
And I think the ones that are not trying,
the problem
that are not trying, you know, eventually they'll maybe start trying, because you just heard that many of them seek help.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's what we want to do. We want them to seek help.
It's like I said, I understand
and that's
what they're
exactly
trying to
right.
accomplish.
Yeah.
I understand what they're trying to accomplish, but they could put good, decent people in
a bond.
Oh, that's a tough one right there.
That's what I've been saying.
And so I'm opposed. Unless there's some exclusion or exemption, if the family and the parents are doing the right thing.
And I think that if we add, like, we section 3 on this is where we, on the first violation, notice of this condition requirements, this chapter given to a violator, written or verbal warning. So that's an opportunity for the officers to go, okay, what have you been doing? Where are we going?
I think you look at it, you go, oh, this is a misdemeanor. It's innocent until proven guilty. Mm-hmm. A proper investigation has to be done. Evidence collected.
Exactly.
So is there a way to get in here rather than, I know it's, you've got your first warning in here, but as part of that first warning, giving these parents some information to get them help.
I can include that in the warning as far as local support services.
Get that in there, and I'm with you.
I can get that in there right away. I meet with juvenile court services a lot.
I think maybe
that's my biggest fear is just you're taking a parent that's already drowning, and now the police department is going to be throwing more rocks at them.
Yeah.
And when you're already drowning and you get more rocks thrown on you, you just say the heck with it. I give up.
No, I think
write me a citation.
I think on the written warning listed with phone numbers and locations and support services.
Chief Police, if I may, New Hope document, something similar to that.
The New Hope document. That's for domestic violence victims. If we think of it that way, we can actually assign them, you know, is it okay if they reach out to you? You know, or to just sign here saying juvenile services will be contacting you for services. So we can do that.
That would be perfect.
Yes.
That's perfect.
Yes, that would be inside that written one.
So
I'm good.
I just want you to really enjoy the conversation.
I'm very conflicted with this. Very conflicted with it. I do not believe the government belongs in the home. I don't.
Well, the shooting that just happened, I think the kid was 10 years of age, and they're going to try him as an adult. And I think the parents are doing time too. That's what I heard on the last I heard.
Okay, then if his parents are doing time, then the kid was unsupervised, period.
Well, that's where it's going, you know, stuff like that. You know, it's getting so crazy nowadays that you got to really put the nail, you know, hit the nail hard with a hammer.
I think if we're getting to this point where we're writing an enforcement citation, it is time for the government to step in and assist that family, whether they want to or not.
We don't want them to.
That's the whole thing. That's perfect wording right there. Is assist, not cite. Assist.
Because it means to get that assistance.
Parents that have kids that are doing this, they need help.
Yes,
they need help. And having a citation written to them is not helping them.
If we the first one with the written warning, we can provide all that to them.
So I was conflicted on this. I was a dead no on it just because of the reason that I stated. But if he can guarantee and get it in here that he's going to get assistance for these parents on this warning.
I wouldn't say guarantee.
No.
It's
give them a packet.
I'll do everything I can to get it to them.
That's what I
want
to
see. Absolutely.
You know, like I said, we've got good officers here.
Yeah.
But knows what's coming down the road.
The idea of the written warning is what pushed over the prosecutor to agree to this.
And with the information,
mm-hmm.
the information.
Not just that you're going to get in trouble. You know, that doesn't work. I'm going to show you how to stay out of trouble.
Right.
That's what I want.
Yeah. You can give them a packet with all the information that they need that they can contact. I think that's great.
That in the ordinance.
I can say that it'll be in the written warning right now for sure.
So
you want the verbiage that the resources will be provided mm-hmm. at the time of warning?
Yes.
In section 3. Can you add that?
It says the notice shall indicate the penalty imposed by this chapter. Okay, and then I can say along with social services. For support with contact information.
Perfect.
So then we could entertain a motion with those changes.
So I'll make the motion to approve this ordinance with the change that we just talked about.
Second.
Okay, motion's been made and seconded. Any question?
Chief, if you could provide the council an example of that warning, which showing the list of resources, I'd appreciate it.
Or...
Yeah, I could bring it in.
Awesome.
We have to create it, but I can
yes.
bring
it in. All right, a motion's been made and seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And opposed?
Aye.
And motion passes.
Thank you, council.
All right, then we're going to
know.
We're going to move to 4D, introduction of nonconforming uses, or OMC 1779. And we have Ann to present this.
This is another code cleanup item. The zoning code has a nonconforming uses chapter that is very out of step with how other jurisdictions across the state regulate nonconforming uses. And so we're trying to make it both simpler code, that's always, I'm trying to make code simpler, and also just make it regulate things more like other jurisdictions regulate them. And so some of the big changes, well, let me back up. Okay, so nonconforming uses are uses that were established at a time they were legal then, but then something has changed. Either the zoning has changed, the zoning text has changed, it's been annexed, so it's no longer a conforming use. And so those are generally allowed to continue. It's commonly known as grandfathering. But the way the Othello Code is currently written, those uses have to go away within 10 years. There's supposed to be a public hearing in front of the Planning Commission and the City Council. There's this whole process that would be very cumbersome. And to my knowledge, we haven't ever done that. So the code that you have here, the draft, is changing those things. Let's see if there's anything else. So there's still a few more items that I'm going to work on with the Planning Commission. And this one I did remember to send to the city attorney, and she gave me some preliminary comments. So it's going to be changed some from what you see here, but just to kind of give you an introduction to the topic, see if you generally have some comments of things you want the Planning Commission to consider when they're looking at it. I just wanted to bring it to you to give you the opportunity before the Planning Commission gets any further with it.
So we do we have some houses that have moved the that we moved the commercial into the the commercial into their location where it was residential?
So there are some existing houses. So like on Main Street, there are some houses, even though it's all commercial all down Main Street. Over by the old hotel, there's some houses kind of mixed in with commercial, kind of a transitional area. So there are... That's one of the issues I need to figure out is how do you deal with those? Because generally, a residence in a commercial zone isn't really a problem for anyone. It's more if you have a commercial use in a residential zone, that's potentially more of an impact on the neighbors. And so that is one of the issues I'm still trying to figure out how to, what to propose to the Planning Commission for them to consider.
The problem I have here with that is, are they going to be able to pull a permit to add to the house and put a garage in, or put a garage in? I think if they were grandfathered in, and that commercial, it zoned commercial where it was residential, I mean. My opinion, I think they should
be allowed to.
Should be allowed. I mean, there's a lot of people that don't, that been there for life, and I mean, their grandparents owned it, their parents owned it, now they own it. They don't want to let go of it. So it's one of them things.
The struggle is, how much do you want it to go away, and how much do you want, because if you want it to go away, then you don't want to encourage them to invest more in it, because that just prolongs how long it's going to be there. But if it isn't really hurting anything and you just stay there forever, then it can stay, you know? So you have to kind of figure out what's the best way to handle that.
So it seems like that's still going to be addressed through the planning committee.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I got a couple things on that too. Sure. So when I was reading through here, it doesn't mention anything about non-compliant ADUs being brought up to standard. And that's one of the things that really needs to be addressed, that if there's an ADU there, it needs to be brought up to standard. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. So in the very first section, so 010D, there's some language from the existing code that I think was written for those non-conforming ADUs, saying they can continue, but they need to enter into a voluntary compliance agreement and get the permits to bring it into building code compliance. You see that? It doesn't say ADU specifically, but it says residential use of a structure.
Yeah, decks, sheds, garages, and retaining walls. That.
No, she's looking at D.
010D.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at, I think. Oh, no, I'm at 12. What was it? 01.
01, it's the 1779-010D.
So near the bottom of the first page of the draft.
Just above the definitions.
Okay.
I think the ADU chapter also talks about that. Let me check. So in the ADU chapter, we do have a section, conditions for legalizing pre-existing accessory dwelling units, non-conforming residents in existence prior to October 25th, 2021 may be brought into compliance pursuant to chapter 1779, which is the non-conforming use chapter.
But that wouldn't be something that code. So wouldn't it be if the city annexes in an area and they've got ADUs in there, that would refer back to non-conforming, not to our current ADU ordinance.
The ADU ordinance references back to the non-conforming use chapter, so that they are tied together.
So under this, what this is saying is, if we annex in an area, they've got a bunch of ADUs there, they would have to bring those into compliance.
Okay, so this section on annexation, which is 065, which says if they were legally in existence prior to annexation, they would continue as a legal non-conforming use. So they would need to have been legally established.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. But they need to, whether they are there legally or not, they still need to be brought up to legal building code. That's what I'm saying. Is they need to be brought up to current living standard, because there's some
which is I think what that D says.
Well, that's kind of what I'm asking, if that would cover that.
Because I believe, Anne, that's what D says, is that you have to have it up to city, to the building code.
Yeah, there's some really bad ADUs around. Oh, there's some really bad ADUs in sheds, inside the city limits. Mm-hmm. That's not being.
So when Angel was talking about in 020C, repair and maintenance, a building or structure containing a non-conforming use may be repaired and maintained if the cost of the work does not exceed 75%. And then D, that same one, a non-conforming use may not be expanded or enlarged.
I guess what we want is that if it's a legally existing ADU, it's a non-conforming use, it needs to be up to building code. Oh. It needs to be livable.
Right.
We can't allow it to just exist because it existed before. Mm-hmm. It needs to be up to building code.
Now that I'm thinking about it, those might be addressed through the property maintenance code. I will check on that.
Mm-hmm.
Something that we could take enforcement on.
So the, let's see, the next one I got is at 1779.45. So there's a portion of the statement in here that says, no lot being modified, divided, or adjusted in any manner that would violate dimensional area. And then there's another statement in here. It says, except that a government agency may lawfully modify a lot in a manner that would result in nonconformity. That's exactly why people hate governments, because it's a do as I say, not as I do. That has to come. That's a deal killer for me right there, that one line. If everybody else in the community's got to follow the laws, the city's got to follow those same laws.
Okay. I just, you know, borrow that from somebody else so we can just take it out.
What's that?
I just borrowed it from another code, so I can take it out.
And then the last one is 80. 1779.80. So all of this, and maybe I'm reading it wrong, but it basically says that if somebody's duplex or triplex burns down, they're not going to be able to rebuild it.
That's being stricken.
I know. It, right now it says it, let's see. It says what's there says that it may be rebuilt, but it's being stricken out. So what I'm reading that as is that they may not be rebuilt.
So yeah, it would just fall back on the other provisions that are already in here.
That's 020. If it was legally done, where somebody got a building permit to put up duplexes, then they're exempt.
So why would
any legally established non-conforming use may be continued until such time that it is discontinued or prescribed in subsections of this section?
So this would actually fall under that a subsection. It says that it's I'm just not sure why you would take that out, allowing somebody to rebuild their duplex or triplex.
So in 020B, which is page 2, about in the middle, it says non-conforming uses are discontinued if 020B3, if the structure has suffered substantial destruction as a result of fire or other casualty not intentionally caused by the owner or tenant, which I have a question about that. But and a complete building permit application is not filed within a year of such fire. So that's saying if your duplex burns down and you apply for a permit within a year, you can rebuild it. I don't know if a year is long enough with the insurance process. That was a kind of a question that I had. So that's a more general statement that I believe addresses existing rebuilding duplexes or triplex.
So if a tenant destroys the property owner's property, we're not going to allow the property owner to rebuild.
I was thinking we should maybe take out that not intentionally caused part, because kind of whatever the cause is, I don't want to get into that part. Just if it burns down,
yeah,
and you apply for a permit to rebuild it.
Yeah. If you were legally permitted to have it in the first place, mm-hmm. you should be able to rebuild it and go right back to it, regardless of what happened.
Right.
Yeah. If it's not legal,
a whole other issue.
Rezoning mm-hmm. is changing all the time, and you know, we've gone through it already as a process, 3 times in the city since I've been on council. So,
yep. I think that provision was in there before, because before the non-conforming provisions were, it had to go to the planning commission to declare it a non-conforming use, and then it had to go to the council to say, yes, you can have a building permit. So they were taking duplexes and triplexes out of that overall process that everybody else had to follow.
Okay.
So now we're just making it easier on everyone, that it doesn't matter because we're taking away that public hearing and all of that process.
So that 2.0 would cover the burning down of the triplex or duplex. Mm-hmm. And that probably should be, like you said, it should probably be longer than a year.
Find out what the standard is right now for insurances.
That it was legally built, that if it was, mm-hmm. it was actually permitted. And there's record of it.
Any other questions?
Yep. That covers it.
Yep.
Okay, so we're moving to Item 5 is unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business to come before the council? Hearing none. Any new business? Item 6. Okay, hearing none. Item 7, council will also receive the department head report from the police department for August. And with that, we'll close this meeting at 6:57.